Znaczy, wita kalendarz poszedł na kolejny. To da jest wielo.
But at the end, the parliament must have its own process to pass the bills and, you know, whatever, pass or not pass the bill, and all of that. So we had the Mr. Nene on the I wish we can call this another name, give it another name. Ria, I know it's Ria Pierre, so it would be nice to call Ria Pierre all the time. So I was saying these are parliamentary processes, and I would like to members to give an opportunity to the legal services. We have the state law advisor, so that the parliamentary legal services can just enlighten us on the issue of Raya, Honorable Sandam. And remember that the final deliberations and whatever we do, it's on the 25th of October when it comes back. Remember, but we'll meet again on the 30th. So, Mayor, can you introduce yourself and then just give us your understanding and interpretation and advice on this issue, because it's quite critical.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to everyone in the house. I just indicated that if members can bear with my voice, I unfortunately have a terrible fever and a short throat. The name is Phumelele Ngema. I am with Legal Services within Parliament. Chairperson, I will just surely limit myself to addressing the question of regulatory impact assessment. And taking from your small joke, I would basically call it in full rather than EAPF. Chairperson, the first thing I think we're supposed to appreciate for purposes of this regulatory impact assessment process is that it's not a constitutional requirement. It is also not necessarily a legislated requirement, but it is a mechanism that the executive came up to ensure that the processes of bringing about legislation, repealing the laws, or re-enacting the laws, and also understanding that once the Constitution came into effect, we had to look at everything. It is basically a rationalization process that the executive has decided it will assist in great areas to ensure that the law is consistently and in sync without any implications to what, because the statute book must be speaking into one and not have things that are confusing or contradicting. Having said that, Chairperson, as you have already indicated, that even Parliament, for an example like court, it's a creature of statute. Whatever is done in Parliament must be mandated in the Constitution or in the legislation. Now, that is exactly what happened when Parliament established its own rules to guide it. So Parliament must comply with the Constitution as well as the rules when it is processing legislation. Now there's a difference between regulatory impact assessment and the legislative processes. And it is not necessary that they run parallel or that the other can hinder the other, because as I said, they are different processes which are both crucial. And having said that, Chairperson, the regulatory impact assessment can be done at any given time. It can be done before the bill is initiated. And as we know, there are two processes that a bill can be initiated, which has been confirmed from the Ambrosini judgment. It can be initiated by the executive, it can be initiated by Parliament through its own members. So the regulatory impact assessment, as the word says, is an assessment of our statutes, of what is regulating the country. Now, when a bill is a bill, it is about to go through a legislative process that eventually will make it an enactment, and it will then be law. But when it is a bill, it is nothing, because it can't be enforced, it can't be applied. It is basically a document that is brought before Parliament to say, as legislators, look at this and deliberate on it to make a resolution or an indication that you think it is necessary for the country. It is necessary to deal with vacuums. It is necessary to deal with mischiefs that have been identified. Now, moving on from that, Chairperson, as I said, the regulatory impact assessment can be done at any given time. I think for purposes specifically of what we are doing, as now it is the legislative processing of the Feelings and Publication Amendment Bill, we need to keep in mind, this is not a new standalone bill. It's an amendment of an existing act. I think crucially, what maybe the department can assist the members with is an indication whether when the Feelings and Publication Act in the first place went through the same processes while it was a bill, was there never a regulatory impact assessment that was done? Then assist the members also moving forward and deciding what it is that they can do in this instance. Because as I've indicated, this is not a standalone bill. It is a bill that seeks to amend the principal act that is already in the statute book. But I think what should be clear is to appreciate that there is nowhere in the rules of Parliament, as well as in the Constitution, which provides or enables Parliament to basically say a regulatory impact assessment has not been done in this instance. Therefore, the bill must be kicked out or must be withdrawn or must be halted. That would be acting outside of the powers that we have. But I think I must also indicate that the fact that within the legislative process, there's an opportunity to engage the public at large, engage the specific interested stakeholders on the issue. That on its own, it can amount to the impact assessment of whatever would arise out of that enactment once it becomes law. So, from my view, it is basically a good process that enables an opportunity for everyone to influence what will eventually end up in the statute book. But the regulation impact assessment is basically to ensure that what you have brought in will work out, or when it's already being implemented, it is actually achieving what it's intended to achieve. And that is the whole purpose of the regulation impact assessment for legislation. Thank you, Chair.
We just, what shall I say, I just wanted to follow what the department was saying, so that she unpacks issues for our understanding, so that at the end
we know the animal we're dealing with. And I think we do. Members, now it's time to ask questions. There was a presentation from the department, assisted by FPB, and then we did get that interpretation of the regulatory impact assessment. I'll start with you, Honorable Kungubele. Shall I call him Monley or shall I? The short one is Monley. Honorable Monley. Remember, if I say Honorable Monley, you'll know that I'm delayed. I'm not undermining him, calling him by the first name. Like when I'm saying, avoiding to say Fandam, I'll say Honorable Pumsi. That's a short telling of the whole thing. Members, I'll start with Honorable Monley, Kungubele, Honorable Fandam, and then Honorable Fandeik, Honorable Teddy, Honorable Machoba, Honorable Kavak. In that order, members, over to you, Comrade Monley.
Thank you, sir. Also, allow me to engage on the bill with the inclusion of the RIA presentation. Probably I want to start with the RIA presentation. Maybe as a soonly accomplished lawyer, you can assist me, because I was worried when you said it is outside our powers. There's a difference between what is outside your power and what is necessary to be done so that you produce good work. I don't know, what is outside your power when you conduct yourself to work better. Because RIA is not just about whether you serve the purpose. It's about what implementation mechanisms you require with the key elements of within minimum resources with bigger impact and all those key elements are involved. We'll talk about that impact and all the other issues you raised. So when you do that with a purpose of quality results, why would you refer to it as outside, as entrepreneurs? I'm a bit worried about that. Maybe that's okay. Two, that you will also assist. There is something you guys as lawyers wish to call. Sometimes courts would have said you did not apply your mind on this net. One of the things that I understand to be involved there is that you would have looked at all the critical things in order to be able to, in order to take that matter forward. And if it's a principle on the basis of which a court can take a decision, to what degree that element is a legal requirement, whether it's for the purpose of common law or statute, whatever you call it. So I would request you to assist us on that. I accept that you're saying it's not a requirement, but I've just raised two issues so that it gets clarified, then we can come and actually align with this. When I come to the department, the general language I wanted to request the department to maybe to look at. Generally, when we present, we don't seem to be looking at what we are presenting as a proposal. How we react to stakeholders is, I disagree. And it's a language that lacks the courtesy of legal development within the context of the law, with the civil society having a particular legitimate role to play in the matter. It's like sometimes you come across as having no obligation to explain the decisions that they are taking. So the principle of we propose becomes very, very important. Like sometimes when you say this thing can't go to SOP, it can go. You're supposed to say we propose that it should not because of ABC and so on. But the language, it's just a question of language, but there are two or three issues I wanted to come to. One is if you come to SA Communications Forum, where you deal with powers of compliance, my understanding is that the response you are given is not direct to the question. The question, the comment there says powers of compliance monitors the question are too broad and open to abuse. The key word there is broad and open to abuse. But your response is, we do not agree. I don't know with what. And if you say you do not agree with it, you must explain why it is not too open and too broad. Because there is no such explanation. Instead, you find a movement that says health regulations have similar processes and you are not responding to the question. That says it's too broad, and of course as parliamentarians, when we ask this question, we must be able to explain why it is not too broad and open to abuse, but there is no such response there. And if you go to I think it says forum number 4, again it says in F, 18E does not accord the respondent of illegal content an opportunity to be heard before content is taken down. Again, I want to argue that answer is general. Because what you are saying is that this has been revised and now provides a criteria for dealing, but I don't think you are saying this concern is addressed. And if it's addressed, you're not explaining how is it addressed. And so I'm arguing the adequacy of responses in a manner that can help me, who is recipient of your proposal, and further, without you being present, be able to answer other people. Again, if you go to for SA Communication 5, your response there says, we agree with multi-choice that the mandate of FPP will be taken away. But I'm calling for, not that it's an obligation, I'm calling for an independent rationale on your side. That why do you think this is not necessary? When you say it's a technical response, but you are not actually dealing with the other key elements substantively that would have actually led to that concern. When you say you agree, it becomes a mere technical response. Again, the last one is, that is right to know number 2, that is bullet point 2, where you say should not, where the comment says should not see them merely as passive victims and must take into account their rights and freedoms. Again, my worry there is that the answer is technical and does not deal with the theoretical element of that. Because when you deal with the rights of children, they are rights of children as determined by society. They are rights of children as demanded by children. And then how do we theoretically assist one another so that we are clear when you respond to what is it that you are dealing with. My questions are not major questions, but they are just minor issues that I think you can easily deal with.
Thank you.
Honorable Fonda. Thanks, Chair. Thanks to the Department and the FPB for their presentation. As the Chair correctly points out, it is now up to us as a committee to consider the bill clause by clause. The bill now belongs to us. It no longer belongs to you. So we will take your input on board, but it is ultimately up to us to make the amendments that we fit. Now, on to your actual presentation, which I will deal with, despite this bill now belonging to us. When I got this presentation, I was really, really excited because I thought the department has listened to the public, they've listened to the stakeholders, they will make the amendments suggested by stakeholders in the industry. But on closer examination, the only thing you're actually conceding on, the only major point that you're conceding on is ICASA.
and not overstepping in Carter's mandate. The rest of the stuff you're not conceding on. The rest of the major constitutional concerns raised by, during public hearings, raised by our members, you have not dealt with. You're only conceding on one point. So in fact, you're not making any concessions at all. You're not actually making any major concessions as required, as requested by the major industry players, as requested by the people which this law seeks to regulate. You have also not considered on pre-classification. And don't come here and try and see the about what the judgment said. The judgment was very, very clear. The court held that any pre-publication classification limits the right of freedom of expression vital to a democracy. Limitation is only allowed, limitation must be justifiable in an open and democratic society, and only if they are, and there must be, sorry, if there are less restrictive means for the issue at hand, then that should be applied. I believe there are less restrictive means for classification in this instance. There is self-classification, a system that you have that is working quite well now. There's no need to implement pre-classification. And also, if you persist on making sure that if we persist as a committee to ensure that pre-classification is left in this bill, that on its own will be grounds for this bill to be challenged in the Constitutional Court. And then also another problem which I have identified is that you also persist on wanting to take down rape sites without a court order. That is actually really, really quite problematic. You cannot infringe on the rights of people who own websites without seeking a court order. That's also another problem that I've identified with this bill, is that you are seeking to overstep the mandate that you have. You're seeking to take up some of the powers that our courts have, some of the powers that the police have. Your role is really just to report those instances to SATs, to make sure that you take the issues to the NPA, that you wait for court judgments. Instead, you are seeking to overstep the powers of the judiciary, of our law enforcement agencies, to yourself, to now become the people that do that. And that is also quite problematic. And so, Minister's advisor, this is not a technical amendment. This is not a mere technical amendment. You're not merely changing definitions or changing minor things in the bill. It is major, substantive issues that you're introducing, new issues that you're introducing in the bill. So it's wrong to say that it's only technical amendment. It's not technical amendment. You're introducing core regulation, you're introducing a penalty committee, you're introducing many things, so it's not a technical regulation. It's not technical amendments, it's major and it's substantive. And then ma'am, who is the state to the law advisor from Parliament, with all due respect, it would not be the first time that Parliament has given the wrong legal advice. It's the reason why Parliament keeps losing so many court cases, because they get given the wrong legal advice. In terms of the rule, the committee, sorry ma'am, are you listening? In terms of the rules, Parliament has to conduct a motion of desirability before we consider legislation. And in this instance, I think it is important, while considering a motion of desirability, that we have all the facts in front of us. And part of those facts would be provided in the regulatory impact assessment. So I think it is important and it's crucial as part of that rule in Parliament that we conduct, we have the information, that the regulatory impact assessment would provide. Otherwise, that motion of desirability would not have been, would not have properly applied our minds to that motion of desirability. And then to the department, in terms of RIA, there is a policy which was adopted in 2003, which required that several steps take place before a bill is introduced to Parliament. It requires that there's seven different steps that need to take place, which I'm sure you're aware of. And one of those steps is that you have a full and updated RIA before a bill is submitted to Parliament. Do you have a full and updated RIA before this bill was provided to Parliament? Otherwise, you would have failed in your duty before introducing this bill to Parliament. So is there a full RIA? Was one undertaking? If not, then we cannot consider this bill until it does. And it's actually not a good argument, sir, to say that if you conduct a RIA, will delay the bill and conditions will change. because you haven't conducted a bill, conducted a rear, you are not aware of what those future issues are. So it's actually not a good argument. You need to conduct the rear. In the rear, you'll know what those changing circumstances are, and you make sure that you present a bill that will deal with those possible issues. Right now, you're asking us to pass a bill, which in 18 months, as you correctly point out, things may have changed. So go and find out what those things are, come back and present a bill that has considered all possible future circumstances that need to be taken under consideration. I think that's it for now. Yeah.
Thank you. And Dave?
Thank you, Chief. Thank you for the presentation. I also want to get clarity on a few points. I would like an explanation in your own words. The difference between a search engine, a hosting provider, and an ISP. And you call Google Search a hosting provider in the report, which it is not. And can you please explain with reasonable certainty on this matter? And then I also want to have more clarity on exemption for broadcasters. ETV's legal representative, Bud Lender, he indicated that by placing streaming of live content by broadcasters under the Film and Publication Board and not the ICASA regulation, the bill effectively prohibits streaming of live content as it is to be pre-classified, and it's not possible to pre-classify a news event, sports match, or State of the Nation address before they happen. And Honourable Kalaka also raised a question as something which was raised in SLSC's presentation, and in response to the DOC or the Film Board did not properly answer the question. They indicated VOD or Video On Demand falls with FEB and broadcasting with ICASA, and everybody is in agreement with that. But the bill does not refer to VOD, it refers to streaming content on the internet, which creates the problem. And how will the FBB deal with the fact that a bill as currently drafted will prohibit the streaming of live content on internet by broadcasters as not possible to reclassify the live content? And then I want to refer you to Bandina's legal opinion with regards to that was supplied by ETV. I also want you to know how will the FBB differentiate content by broadcasters that is flighted through the internet, and will there be financial implications for broadcasters? The broadcasting industry cannot be regulated by two institutions from one government. And then I want to know, why are games and films deemed more harmful than books or other media? On what basis is that justified? In the AISA oral submission, they raised that the book 50 Shades of Grey was not classified, but the film was. What makes film different? And how does the FBB intend to deal with online international distributors of games who do not register with the board? The other question I want clarity on is, how is user-generated content defined? And then I also want to know, if you compare the FBB to the Entertainment Software Ratings Board, a self-regulatory body that governs North America, or the Pan-European Game Information that covers the EU, or even the UK, the classification is only mandatory for some content, namely gross violence or sexual activity, but all other content is not required to be classified. Why do they not have criminal sanctions attached to them if they don't, or if you don't classify? But the FBB aspires for that. That will be all for now. Thank you.
We are able to capture the questions so that there is no coming back that my question is not answered. Because if you didn't catch, then you must say that immediately so that we'll deal with that issue on the spot. Honorable Teddy.
If the role players are saying or they are suggesting a route which says some of the committees that you are proposing lack sufficient independence, and in your response you then say you don't want to trouble the minister, and you will appreciate a situation where some of these things are handled by FPP. To me, it's a bit problematic. And it's like you are doing the opposite of what people are suggesting. I'm raising this thing because FPP then becomes, in my view, a player and a referee. And I want to specifically address myself to the appeal board. If you want FPP to be the one responsible for the appointment of the appeal board, I'm not satisfied with the decision of FPP. And if I were to appeal, I must still go to a committee that reports to FPP. To me, it's a bit problematic. It's doing the opposite of what the stakeholders or the role players are suggesting. Maybe you can clarify that particular aspect. Linked to that one, it's a proposal which says all these committees that you are just suggesting need to be the process towards the nominations need to be a transparent process where the public as well have a stake in terms of the nominations process. But still, I don't see a clear-cut proposal or suggestion in the language of Honorable Mwandle. Because you are supposed to be suggesting to Parliament in terms of how best can we deal with these issues going forward. The second one, Honorable Chair, is an issue that Honorable Mwandle typed earlier, 18E. There is an argument which says you can't take down an illegal content until you have heard the respondent. That's the argument. And I was looking at your response there. You are not addressing that issue directly. And you are not clear exactly what is it that you think needs to be done to address that particular concern, which to me is also a very valuable contribution from those who are bringing that particular issue. The Jewish Board of Deputies came up with one very valuable contribution. They are saying the identity of perpetrators of hate speech. We must force the internet service providers and all these relevant structures to release the identity of perpetrators of hate speech, which to me is a very valuable contribution, especially in the light of what has been happening some few months ago. Parliament at some stage even had a debate on this particular issue. It's an issue that all of us are concerned about. So the Jewish Board of Deputies has a release the identity of the perpetrators of the perpetrators. And again, I was looking at your the response there. It's not very, very clear whether you align yourself with the proposal or if you have a problem. I'm not getting very clear what is it that you are saying with regard to that particular issue. The last one, it was 16-2, as raised by Inter-Active Entertainment South Africa, I think. Their argument has been the whole of Section 16 is unconstitutional. And in your response, you are saying the judgment is only in the area of 16:2, which talks to magazines. That magazines should be exempted in a way in terms of the constitutional court judgment. That magazines should not be subject to prayer distribution classification. So I have a problem as well with that particular judgment. And I would appreciate if, I don't know whether from the state law advisor side, you can then be able to clarify how then do we strike a balance between the mandate of APD on classification and the court judgment, which says magazines need to be exempted from prior distribution classification. So maybe let me direct that one to the state law advisor to then clarify the mandate of APD vis-à-vis this judgment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Session. I think I'll limit myself to just a few points because I've been broadly covered by the previous speakers. One of my concerns, Chief Session, is the fact that the traditional councils you are not taking into consideration in this instance. According to my view, we as the portfolio committee, we are dealing with some of the principles of nation building and social cohesion. And as a result, the traditional councils play a very important role in the fact that they are dealing with cultural matters. And when dealing with this amendment, we are zooming into matters relating to kids. We are zooming into matters relating with race, which are several other issues that I feel that can be directly linked with the traditional councils, and therefore I would like to advise the department to rethink that, and also the portfolio committee to really try and venture into that area to allow the traditional councils to have an opportunity to raise their concerns or input with regards to this matter. I think for now I'll pause there. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Some of the issues were raised by my colleague, Comrade Uchweli, Honorable Chair. But my question, I just need the clarity in Section 18. Section 18 says there's still needs to be addressed in terms of outstanding of the issues. And we don't know those issues that are missing by now. My question here, does those issues have no impact of delaying the passing of the bill, or they have no effect to this bill to be passed also? Secondly, Chair, in the issue of Jewish board, I was indicating with my second question, that's why my voice is scrambling now, because some of my colleagues was asking. I'm happy with the concern of the Jewish board in terms of
forcing to release the identity of the perpetrators of hate speech. But I think, Chair, by not go further about this question or about this concern, I just need a clarity in Section 18 to those outstanding of the issues, what are really those issues that need to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure what's going on up here. But it's disturbing. Okay. Honorable Kalako.
Chair, most of the issues have been covered by my colleagues. Maybe let me start, Chair, by saying I'm sure all of us here, we have the same concern as FPP and the department. And I'm sure you initiated this amendment precisely because of the developments in the environment and in the country, which also we agree that there must be an instrument. You must be armed with something dealing with those, with the problems emerging out of the development of technology, development of all this. It's not like an old time. But I think we must understand that what a product when actually we refine, we pass it, can stand the test of the court, where the Constitutional Court in particular. That's the key to us. We are aware of what it's trying to address. That is why I think it's very important for us that we are with you to share our understanding, and you are helping us to actually understand some of the areas. I have seen the department together with FPP, you have tried to address many of the areas which were raised during the public hearings deliberations. And I will want to say, I won't get into the rear. Let me hear the response after the legal person has responded. Because to me, I think the department, in some of your presentations, you do acknowledge that the impact assessment will continue to be ongoing thing. And at the same time, I'm not sure whether this, maybe you'll answer when you give us answers, that when the old bill which we are amending was done, was there an impact assessment done then, which now maybe you say is going to be ongoing? Have you done it in considering this amendment? So I'll want that. And then the other proposal, say, I want to, because I think we still have time, a resolution of whether we go forward with the bill or not is going to be when we meet as a committee trying to consider now all these inputs and all our understanding of what is contained in the bill. Not worried about that. That will deal with it when we arrive at that. What I want to share, which is going to assist, because if the department, FPP, they are able to clear all these legal, constitutional matters to us, and the issues which were raised yesterday is going to be offered. But I was going to propose, Chair, because if you look all these presenters there, there's this concern. I want to go back to it. I've seen the response here when you're responding what multi-choice is saying, what SABC, ICASA, but there's one concern with all these broadcasters. We should have maybe to also to explain it to us. This problem of you are classified by ICASA, you get accredited by ICASA, again the FPB on the other side say once you get that license, you get everything, you are accredited, you must come to us also so that we accredit you or you get a license of this other thing now we are doing on this part. And that's the area to me which you seem not to have understanding. That is between the department and these broadcasters. I would propose, Chair, it will help the department and us. If you, because they came there individually and presented to us, and also they presented as that association of broadcasters, if you look into those, and they are raising the similar issues, nothing new that much. It's just a re-emphasis of what was raised by individual broadcasters. So I would tell you, so that you go through this, and you try to find each other, come back to us, or you will get a product of whatever. I would propose that the department and FPP sit down with this National Association of Broadcasters. You get into this. We don't say agree, but sort out these areas which they seem to be. So, and if you put your position, you come and put it to us. And as long as it will be understandable even from them that you are on your legal path and it does end as they were raising some areas in care more cost for them as you alluded to us. But you are not losing anything in making and engaging with them. I would propose that, Chair. But we are very, the other thing which you must understand with us, we want this deal in order to deal with these problems. As we are saying, kids today, just take your phone. All of a sudden, he presses things there, there are pornographic pictures there, all this nonsense, and you don't know where, when you go to your phone, you don't know even where he actually, what he touched. So this thing is ongoing and is developing. We don't want to delay the addressing that problem. But let's do it thorough, meet with these broadcasters, meet with this. It's just you clear this other. You have presented to us so that we are able to move with the bill. The last aspect I would want to emphasize, the bill is for us. Now it's not for the minister and department. So in your document, no, clearly, let's correct you. When you say this issue of tribunals, appeals or what, is the minister, it's the committee. If the minister does not agree with the committee, the minister will put his position and come with a proposal if it's against our own proposal. So once now you put it on before us, it's us who are dealing with it. We will call you if we want clarities and we want to move forward with you. So Chair, I wanted just to clarify that aspect. Because you know in the past there's this tendency as if as parliamentarians we don't know our role. And I think it's time we re-emphasize that role so that it comes to the fore time and again to everybody who comes to parliament.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good day, honorable members and officials. You see, I hate to repeat one thing and again, but because of I've been well represented by honorable Kalaku, I will just quickly see that I second him. You go and meet all the stakeholders. You make sure that you meet even those broadcasters association and refine all the issues. And before you submit the final submission, that's all. Let me not do totally. I thank you, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Kakana, thank you very much. NAB across the page. ETV and Association of Christian Media. Three. You deal with multi choice there and you elaborate. You don't deal with issues of ETV. Did you say that? Maybe if you can also deal with that. I hope this thing that the Honorable Kalaku is facing sinks. The time it comes here, it's a bill that we are handling. So, we are Parliament. Issues of cabinet and ministers and all that kind of stuff, they don't belong to our discussion. So, in terms of the bill, he raised that. I think you know what you understand what he said. But don't forget in your responses on the regulatory impact assessment. You talk about the come along the board. You know that what that means. You pay Mamumla and the point is a pound in terms of English or British pounds. So do attend to the issue of the principal bill. Don't forget that. We are amending the bill. On Rhea, I just got a question that was asked. But I also think that that language is quite critical. The language you are talking about. You call the public hearing. Respect the views of those people and try to ensure that they are integrated. And definitely we agree or we concede and stop there. It doesn't mean anything. I think Honorable Monte was very clear on that one. So that we begin to understand what are you talking about. Mr. Masile was going to town explaining that the judgment doesn't reflect your explanation. Because the judgment, it's a public judgment now. It goes to public, it's a record. And if a committee comes after us 2 years after we have left, they won't understand this. Because you have power. The people who are coming before this committee, that will never explain anything to them. I know we are up to 1 o'clock, but we'll have to go beyond this understanding that we are supposed to please conclude the part of today. We'll come back on the sentence and proceed with other issues. But questions that are raised today, we must respond to them. Mr. Mashiach.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. We also take the point raised by Honorable Kungubele, especially around the language, and as you have pointed out, Chair. Through your permission, I would like to ask the State Law Advisor to assist in terms of responding to Section 18E. And Section 16 related to the premier before I share the response to the other colleagues.
For you, Chair. I share the issue of Section 16 raised by stakeholders that in its entirety it should be scrapped or is unconstitutional. Let me deal with that, Chair. And also in respect of the powers of the board related to Section 16. Chair, in terms of Section 16, Section 16, it provides for classification of publications. And the board it has the power now to refer any publication to a classification committee so that this publication can be examined and classified, Chair, as a refused classification, XX, X18, and all those categories. Section 16.1, Chair, at the moment, provides that a person may request his publications to be classified. Now, the exemption or the exceptions here apply at the moment to newspapers published by a member of the board and recognized by the press ombudsman. Now, in line with the print media judgment, which provided that magazines are not included and also newspapers are not included in the exemption. The way forward that the court suggested was that the magazine should be included in the exemption so that it do not have to have prior approval for publishing their publications. That was the gist of the judgment. Therefore, now the proposal now, Chair, is that the magazines in terms of the bill should be included in this exemption so that they don't have to approach the board before they can publish their publications. Chair, Section 16 goes to the core of the matter of freedom of expression that is limited, in the sense that before you publish your communication, you have to approach an entity, before you exercise your right to freedom of expression, you approach an entity so that this entity can classify your publication in terms of a certain category in order to avoid this publication from being disseminated and viewed by a certain category of people. That would be a legitimate government purpose for the introduction of certain screen in the beginning, originally, in terms of the end. Therefore, in its entirety, the certain screen is just to, in my view, is to ensure that publications are classified so that there's no of free reign or complete freedom, Chair, to publish communications. Chair, the difference that has come with the print media judgment is that the magazines are also, or rather, magazines should also be exempted from approaching the board before they publish their communications. That would be the difference between the before the premier judgment and, or rather before the premier judgment came, Chair, and afterwards, Chair. They will share the powers of the board are contained in Section 16. They are clear that any person who wants to publish a communication should approach the board chair, except the newspapers. But now, chair, the magazines are going to be included because of the pre-media judgment. Now, Section 16 is in its entirety. Chair, just classification that should classify the communication in the term of the second category. Refuse classification XX, X18, that is the gist of Section 16, which, yes, limits the freedom of expression, chair, but in my view, justifiably so. In terms of Section 16 of the Constitution. I'm not sure, chair, whether I have allocated properly for the members to understand the entire Section 16, what it attempts to do. Let me go to the issue of Section 16. The new Section 18E. Section 18E, chair, provides that the board may take down certain notices. Chair, I would, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, chair, provides that public power must be exercised in a just manner with due regard to due process. Therefore, chair, the departure, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, chair, is always applicable in such situations. Which means, chair, that when the board exercises this proposed power, will have to engage the other individual, give the other individual due process an opportunity to be heard before the board exercises the power to take down a notice. Now, chair, I understand the concern that has been raised here. I would propose the committee to consider maybe in the new Section 18E, whereas part would always be applicable, chair, as it is an act of parliament that gives effect to the constitution, would always be applicable. If that is me, chair, I would propose the committee to consider maybe including in the new proposed Section 18E just the words that is going to be subject to due process or subject to the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. I would propose the committee to consider that proposal. Thank you, sir.
Yes, Mr. Mashela.
I agree with what the state law advisor has said, chair. I would like the FPP to respond to some of the questions that came from the from Honorable Van Damme related to pre-classification limit, right? And if there's any additions related to take down notices without court order. And also to the questions from Honorable Zay related to doing the opposite of what the people were looking for and the independence of committees. And in terms of the nominations and the transparency related to that one, if my colleagues from the
FPP chair, you can delegate.
Chairperson, people will answer. Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before I answer the questions that were posed by the Honourable Van Damme, let me just add on what legislative advice I said regarding Section 16.2 of the Act. What is happening is that post the pre-media constitutional court judgment, this is the criteria that the court has laid down for us when it comes to publications. In terms of Section 16. So it says, firstly, you have all publications that are subject to regulation by the Press Council. Then it says that insofar as those publications, they are exempted, they will enjoy the same exemption as newspapers. So now, the submission by the Press Council and SANEF is that they would want now this also to include online publications that are subject to regulation by the Press Council. with yourself that we agree. Because in any event, in the definition of a newspaper, in the principal act, it said that this will include the online version of the newspaper. So to ensure that we are not restrictive, because then we also have to look at the online platform. So there are those questions. Now, if you think about it, newspapers, these days you can access them, you have your News 24, so it's not necessarily your print. We talk about print media, not talking about hard copies. So if you plan that, we also look into that. So the second criteria is other magazines that are not subject to regulation by the Press Council. And this will include your Hashla magazine, I'm not sure if Scope is still there, and the magazines that contain explicit sexual conduct, such as S18, for example. These magazines, they still submit to us for classification. I want to also touch on what was said about 50 Shades of Grey, that not being classified. It's not correct. The book was classified. We gave it an 18, and the film that got a lower rating. I think, and there were a lot of complaints even before classification, because the impression was, because the book had obtained a higher rating, the people had thought that probably the film would get a similar rating, because people were expecting sort of graphic nudity and sexual content, and those things not desirable, that should go to cinemas. But we did classify that particular publication. So it's not correct that we did not classify publications. But the clear criteria now we follow, which has been laid down for us by the Constitutional Court in the print media. There's a question from the Honorable Hanam that says there's a whole range of issues that were raised relating to the unconstitutionality of the bill, but you only address the issues that were raised by CASA and the broadcasting sector. And also the issue of pre-classification was not addressed. So I said that there's a number of submissions did raise the fact that the bill is unconstitutional, but without them providing detail to say in what respect is the bill unconstitutional, it was going to be difficult for us to second guess and say this is what we respond. Was the reason why we had responded to specific issues insofar as they relate to the constitutionality of the bill. And if you recall, ICASA was very clear, NAP was very clear, ETV was very clear, the gaming sector was also very clear insofar as what issue they are taking with the bill insofar as constitutionality. But the way it goes, we just made blunt statements that the bill is unconstitutional. And it was going to be difficult for us to address those entities without really understanding and without them laying a foundation, a basis for such statements. So when it comes to pre-classification, with specific reference to what the gaming sector said, we have addressed this to say that. And I think, Ms. Van Damme, my honorable member, you also tried to indicate that the print media said that, the print media case said that we when it comes to pre-classification, that we need to look at less restrictive means. I consider that indeed that's what the court said, but it went on further to say that where there are delays insofar as releasing classification decisions, that may constitute an infringement of the freedom to artistic expression. And now, how do we then address this as a Film and Publication Board? Currently, we have systems that ensure that there are no delays in the release of this transition decision. The gaming sector is aware of this. We have the online submission system, which is currently being used by the gaming sector. The login to our system, there's a matrix that they must complete, that they pay, and then once they've done that, so they so this is classification. So we are aware of all of these elements, and we have now empowered the gaming sector to ensure that they take control in terms of when classification decisions will be released. So we've already covered that aspect. the issue of takedown of websites, I don't know if there's this misunderstanding. We have never said we want to take down websites. We said that we want to take down illegal content online and on social media. And I think the federal website did address this. To say that perhaps if there are issues insofar as giving the respondents an opportunity to respond before action is taken, then we can look at making sure that there's alignment with the pleasure. And then we are here with that proposition. Shall I continue? There's also the issue of streaming of broadcasting. So the issue of streaming of broadcasting services, I think we touched on this yesterday to say that there is no intention on the part of the Film and Publication Board to interfere with broadcasting services. And that the Broadcasting Act is very clear so far as what constitutes broadcasting. And again, we have no intention whatsoever to interfere with news coverage. It's not our mandate. We have no intention whatsoever to interfere with the public's right to receive information that's in their best interest. And I think what needs to be clarified here is this. So for example, you have, you can take the Oscar Pistorius case. That case, it was being, the proceedings were being, were broadcast live. As I said, simultaneously, they were also streamed online. And you also had people engaging in social media in terms of Twitter and so forth. So we understand that. So if you take broadcast services and then you put them online, business as a mirror of your broadcast services. And for us, we don't want to classify that. But I'm also very clear that when it comes to video on demand services, this is where we are not willing to concede. And this is why when we say that the submission that says that the exemption should cover all ancillary services being provided by broadcasters, we're saying we cannot concede to that. To the extent that there's the proposed sections 7, 8, and 9 are seen to be problematic, and accepting the mandate of ICASA, we are prepared to concede. But at the same time, it's important that what remains our mandate and it's obviously in the case of multi-choice, they have to engage as a broadcaster, and for their online video-on-demand services, it has to be dealt with under the Films and Publications Board. I think I've covered all the issues that were raised by the Honorable Ms. Fanda.
What's video-on-demand services?
Okay. Video-on-demand services, basically, what industry has done, if you look around, you no longer have your Mr. Video where you can go and rent a DVD. So this is now done online. You there's a service that you can log online, and you pay a fee, and then you then get access to that video, and then you watch. So that's video on demand services. The issue with the penalty committee, there's a question that was asked by Mr. Clay, to say that there's an issue that this penalty committee lacks independence, and I think there was also a concern with the response that came from the department to say that they don't want to travel the minister. I think what we had said was that the proposed committee basically will not be at the same level as the appeals tribunal. Currently, the appeals tribunal reports to the minister. It is independent. It does not report to the board. Inasmuch as all the administrative functions and the expenses that relate to their work are paid by us, but they are independent in all respects. So now, when it comes to this penalty committee, the purpose of this committee is to deal with administrative offenses. Say, for example, technical displays a wrong age rating in a film and the parent is aggrieved by that. Currently, the access, in the event of a contravention, you must go to SAPS. So can you imagine, it would be very draconian for us for each and every matter to be running to the police chain of way and arrest or and so. So we saw that there must be a regime that would enable us to deal with this contraventions administratively. So this body will look at those minor administrative offenses. Of course, there will be other offenses that will not go to this committee, like when it comes to child pornography, as an example, when it comes to hate speech, when it comes to propaganda for war. This committee will not have to deal with these matters because they require the criminal justice system. So our view is that, because currently we have a process of which is being applied to appoint classification classifiers. It is a public participation process, the public nominates, and there's a process of recruitment, and based on the nominations, there are interviews that are being held, and then the classifiers are then appointed. So we're thinking of applying the same so that the penalty committee is appointed by the board, because we have the view that it will be on par with the classification committee. It will not share the same status as the board or the appeals tribunal. I've touched on section 18, he touched on that. I've touched on magazines. So there's because there's an issue to say that the presentation says that there are certain issues that are still outstanding in terms of section 18. I'm not aware of that. Perhaps my colleague from the DOC can assist us with that. We agree with what the Jewish Board of Deputies is saying about forcing ISPs and social networking sites to release the identity of the perpetrators of hate speech. In fact, more often than not, these perpetrators hide behind anonymity. And there's been a number of cases. One example is the Pretoria High School, Pretoria Boys High, where someone had created a profile of these young boys in very compromising position, and he distributed their images. So the police got to be alerted, and they then wanted the assistance of the social network side to make arrests, but then they could not get too far because by that time, that person had taken down the content, and the social network had then refused. So we believe that it's important that they also come on board, and in case of this nature, they assist in making sure that we work together as a collective to ensure that these people face the full might of the law. There is a suggestion that we should meet with the broadcasting sector, so that the final product that we present here is refined, and we, to the extent possible, we reach consensus. Where we disagree, we disagree, and then I think we appreciate the offer, and if it will assist in taking this process forward, it is something that we are prepared to look into. Thank you. There's a question to say, what is an ISP? What are search engines? And then what are hosting providers? ISP is what we refer to as internet service providers. They come in the three tiers of them. But essentially, they provide access to the internet. And when we, and this is, was also there's always been argument to say that because they are the conduit, you know, they provide access to the internet. And to that extent, it would be difficult for them to know what is being carried in their platform in order to conduct monitoring. We concede and we accept that, and which is why we're saying we will let you aware. And because then we rely also on the public. Once we make aware that someone there is illegal content on your network, we have the view that you must take it down, and you should be able to assist us in identifying those repetitors. So one example of a search engine is Google, as we all know. And I think we have had this debate with Google, because they are saying that they have filtering systems to ensure that children did not have easy access to some of this content. And we are aware of some of the tools that they put in place, for example, to block child pornography on their platforms. But of course, the concern, and this is something that I think they are beginning to address, say that how do you ensure that now on the Google search engine, because now if I go to Google now and type the word pornography, you'll be amazed by the number of results. And this is where we are concerned, to say that any person, anyone, people of all different age groups can have access to this type of information, particularly pornography. So now what do we do? And I think this is the question that at the moment Google cannot respond to. But we believe that as a collective, we need to begin to move towards finding solutions, because otherwise we it's a problem that we need to address. So the hosting providers, the work similar to ISPs, for example, when you talk of hosting, so you talk of websites as an example, like in terms of our in-home membership, we do get referrals from Europe to say that there's a website which is hosted here in South Africa which contains child pornography. So there's what we call a URL, which is sort of where this service is hosted. We are then able, using the tools that we have, to do internet tracing, to trace and check that website. And we are then able to analyze. We have content analysts who are certified internationally, who then analyze this content to check if this is illegal or not. And then if we find that it is illegal, we refer to SARS. Or if it is hosted outside the borders of the Republic, we then refer to in-home, who then engage the law enforcement agencies of that particular country. The legal opinion, because now I'm dealing with the issue of exemption of broadcasters, I've clarified the issue in relation to streaming. What we've also done with the third advisor subsequent to the public hearings, we have looked at this definition of a digital firm, so that we very clearly exclude broadcasting services. We have also looked at the definition of streaming to also ensure that we exclude broadcasting services to avoid confusion and then to provide certainty and so that we then address these constitutional concerns. The legal opinion by ECV, we looked at it and I think it was quite helpful, the same as any other submissions that we have obtained. And I think for us, all of those inputs assist us in ensuring that we put together a very sound and valid and document that can also meet the constitutional scrutiny, and was at the end of the day, we also do not want to know where this bill is passed and then we end up in the constitutional court. So we take all the inputs seriously. So we have looked at that legal opinion. I'm not sure if there's anything else, but I think I've covered. And I think also, just to say, members, subsequent to the hearings, we consulted two senior counsels we took the input from the Philippian, from Advocate Butland. We also took the submission from the National Synod of Broadcasters, ACBC, and all that. We shared this with our senior counsel, and we had a legal opinion. It was as a result of that, those two legal opinions, that we started to do away with sections 18.7, 18.8, and 18.9. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We do support the suggestion made by Honorable Fontaine that always when we develop even our future policies, we must engage with the traditional councils, especially as it relates to social cohesion. For example, I apologize now. We will take those into consideration. So, in terms of the issues related to RIA and the suggestions that were made, Chair, we agree that this is the process of Parliament, hence our view that since it's the process of Parliament, we will wait to take cue, formal cue from Parliament to say whether they would permit us to speak to the industry and others to ensure that there is that clarity, because we want to avoid a situation where if we do not go without our mandate, we might want to speak to people and then tell us why do you want to speak as well, speak to us when Parliament is considering them. So the suggestions as you considering to enhance our bill are highly appreciated and accepted, and if there's that specific instruction to us to march that way, we will do so with much enthusiasm to ensure that when we come back to you, we come back with a covering all the issues that were raised by our key stakeholders, and we will consider that to even be part of our RIA as we had said earlier on. Those are the, besides agreeing with what Honorable Bungubele said, and I need to re-emphasize the issue of the Jewish Board of Deputies. You see, they made, as I said yesterday, they made a very important point that we agree with them and support them because this is what we are trying to deal with. But the one thing that came from them is that they understood the law very well. They said, once we found that there was this thing, we followed all the procedures. They went to the Equality Court and all of those things, and which is very key. To say, what is very key is to follow when such things have been classified and people are not responding or whatever, they are other when you are not satisfied, other courts where you are supposed to take those people to take down the matter. So, in terms of aligning it with what they were saying, what we indicated is that we are trying to deal with hate speech online, but it is the primary responsibility of the Department of Justice and the law enforcement agencies that have to deal with that once such illegal issues have been raised. And in terms of responding to making substantive response rather than a technical one and ensuring that when we respond to the right to know about children, it becomes not only technical but theoretical check. I think it is a fair point, as you said, that because we had the research and analysis, it came out, we made a broad or a general answer to that without going into the detail, which we did in a verbal submission. But if that, I think, as you are correctly saying, that will enhance the decisions of the committee, and for historical and record purposes for other members of that, I don't think that it would be a problem to provide such, because I think it was very clear in terms of where we need to do that, and I think it's a very valuable suggestion. In terms of responding to ETV suggestion in that one of the Africans, and I think the response that my colleague gave, it was not to such to dismiss the issue of the ETV in relation to Springleaf, because I think we have dealt with it somewhere. So the point that we wanted to raise was around what I think would enhance the bill via what the multi-choice was saying. But what they have said, I think, as he says, was very valuable. We noted it. And then in terms of our definitions, when we're dealing with it together with the legal advisor, we dealt with the matter. In terms of user-generated content and its definition, I think we provided it in the submission of that 13 pages, the one that the chair had asked the members to go and read. So in terms of page 6, we have the suggested definition of that user-generated content to say what we believe we recommend it should be. But my colleague from FPB, I think, had forgotten to add a few things before I give to Mr. Ney.
Thank you, Mr. Mishra. This was just one. I think there was a question from Honorable Member Fandam whether as FAB we have done our own regulatory impact assessment, and the answer to that is yes. And these reports are there. We have the PIGMA study that was done. We have the BRIDGE IT. We also had one by Shishan to look specifically on the penalty regime. And then there was broad consultations with industry and all stakeholders to ensure that question, but we have that covered. Thank you.
Are you done, Theo?
I needed to add just few remarks on my part. I think, Chairperson, I think it's fair to say and to indicate to the committee that there's a general and universal understanding world over that the market will always be ahead of policy and regulation. But the question then becomes, what then becomes the role of government through like such policy and regulations where the market fail? So that's exactly what we are doing. Now, we have the BEREC, which is the European Union body of regulators in the telecom space, dealing with the OTT services. You may know, Chairperson, that if you are using your WhatsApp, your Facebook, they are encrypted. Also security and test issues. So I can say anything on Facebook, but there aren't any provision that even the national intelligence can use that information. So it's encrypted. So then they also take issues to say, if I'm using or I'm on WhatsApp, just giving an example, and I'm using the network that has been paid for by the, you know, an operator like whoever, I can't name the mobile operators. Shouldn't there be compensation in terms of the tax, because that person would have spent money? Those are some of the issues at that point. So what we are saying is the pace of the industry and the sector with regards to online content should be viewed along the line of the globalized business, as well as what then becomes the role of government in ensuring that we drive a very acceptable standard of societal values. And to answer the question around RIA as well, we would abide by the committee's recommendation on what has happened. But I think it was also important to say, with the RIA, as we said, perhaps we could prepare a situation where we continually do RIA. Because the issue with RIA is that we can do or we can take 3 years. The issue here is policy and regulation will always follow the market. So even if we can take 3 years, by the time we implement, it's debatable. By the time we implement, the market will have moved. So
So this is probably not the first time that the ministry would be coming before the committee. Who knows, maybe in 5 years time, in 3 years time, we'll be coming to say, even the amendments that we have submitted are no longer, you know, suitable in terms of the market trend. So I think we need to understand the real within the context of the globalized market. Thank you.
Chairperson, before FPB responds to the PEGI issue and the distributors. I think Honorable Kalago had a very specific question, and Honorable Fanta. When the law was passed in 1996, there was no RIA phenomenon at that point across the globe. And as I was trying to indicate, I think yes, Chairperson, the issues of government should not come here, but the point that I was making yesterday is that it has become an official government position from the 1st of October to engage in whenever you present something to cabinet or to the Forum of South African Directors, you have to engage from the first, and that is monitored by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the President. It's a legal requirement. All of us, your law will not, anything that is not going to be considered. I'm sorry that I said September, the correct date is 1 of October, and that is monitored by, you cannot present any document from the 1st of October without going via the GPNA and doing RIA with them, and that's what all of us are doing within government. By that time, I think, yes, no, no, 2050. By that time, this one had been processed. So it did not fall within that realm of doing the RIA. So that's the point that I was going to make. But in relation to that important point of Jewish Board of Deputies, I don't know if members were aware of the case of the United States and Apple on refusing to unlock. That's the same challenge that I think the Jewish Board of Deputies is presenting before us. Because with the online environment, you have local people that are hosting content locally. You have others that are hosting it from, and that, I think, from abroad or from outside, and that's what he was trying to explain. And the spirit of this law, Chair, is that moving forward, as we deal with education for the children and everyone in the industry, moving forward, we need to have a very serious collegial and warm relationship with the industry so that they participate in this. There's no way that South Africa on its own can deal with this online matters from its own corner. That's why you require collaborations with others. Like Mr. Silva is saying, if you have a very serious problem with a content service provider where it's even saying that the law enforcement agency has to intervene, only to find that it's operating from Maldives, you require those United Nations or those working groups of regulators across the globe to do this so that you report it to them. And as a single task, that it allows you for them to approach the person to deal with the content service providers. But in terms of the legal challenges that they are facing, I think it's the reality of the sector. But for us to overcome that, what we are saying is that, as you are saying, Google, all the mobile operators and everyone will have to come to the party. And as we move and interrogate this new environment, we will have to work together to ensure that what we try to achieve is achieved in a very seamless way. Because what usually happens, even if you identify the people that are dealing with this, they'll close the site and move into these other ones that are more private or that are that you cannot identify easily, because they do not even use your online environment in a way that you can identify them. So, and every time policymakers are trying to deal with this, they also improve. They also improve in terms of ensuring that they embarrass you as a policymaker, they do not comply with the law. Because I think they get excited as the most innovative people on the level to always beat up the law. So you always have to do deal with ketchup.
maybe Chairperson.
The two questions that were raised by Honorable Fox and Dick related to PAD and the international
Thank you, Chairperson. When it comes to international classification of games, but also films, we have done benchmark and with specific reference to PEGI and the RSB. So the question was whether they also have penalty systems. RSB and PEGI, these are self regulatory bodies. And membership is voluntary. The difference between this and this body and us is that we are an entity of state. And when it comes to PEGI and RSB, you have industry, and in this game, the gaming sector, as an example, coming together and say, let's form standards that we are going to use to for content classification. And what makes it easy for them to enforce is, consumers can boycott your services if they do not bear the PEGI or RSB logo, because it creates it sort of gives validity and credibility to the product. Whereas when you look at us, and I think we've also looked at other countries that have a similar model to what we have in the country, and we looked at Brazil, we looked at Finland, we looked at Australia. Our classification system is mirrored on the Australian classification system. They have a penalty regime. Finland, they have a similar body like us, but what's different is that they have transferred the cost of classification to industry. What they do in Finland is that they train industry on how to classify, and then certify industry classifiers. But they do compliance monitoring to ensure that content that is still available out there is classified. Brazil, they follow the same model as South Africa. The difference is that government subsidizes 100%. So industry doesn't have to pay classification fee. But there are penalties that are attached to non-compliance. So what we are proposing is not something that we just want for the country, but we've looked at various models and tried to import what we believe that can assist us in providing solutions to what we are faced with as a country. And then I think that's the essence of all.
Chairperson, that represent for now the resources that we hope that we will very send to the members. If we have forgotten anything, we apologize.
Okay. What is it, Nemo?
Before she gives her response, I'd like to ask some follow-up questions on Rhea, which I think will assist her as well in giving her opinion, because I think there's a couple of factors that need to be clarified. Can I ask this before she clarifies this? Okay, now, the necessity and the legal requirement, as you say, Chief Director, a legal requirement. I was quite careful in listening to what you said. You said RIA was a legal requirement in terms of the DPME guidelines of actually not 2015, of February 2012. So it existed since February 2012, which lists a number of steps that need to take place as part of a RIA process. Now, I understand that you've conducted research at the FPB, which is great, but it's not RIA. It's not in terms of, is it in terms of, let me not assume. Is it in terms of RIA, of that guideline, which lists a number of steps, which I'll read to you. The steps are, first, you identify a policy issue before a bill is drafted. You do an initial RIA before drafting the bill. And then that initial RIA is used for discussions before the bill is drafted. Updated RIA is concluded, and amendments are made to the bill. You submit a full RIA to Cabinet with the draft bill. We published the full RIA with a draft bill and regulations for comment, after which you update a full RIA before a final submission of a draft bill to Parliament. That's RIA, not research that you conduct as part of your operations. Did you conduct RIA as per the DPME regulation, the guideline, sorry, not regulation, guideline of February 2012? Did that happen?
It was this request to DOC, to DOC, and then Parliament will come later. I'm trying to allay your fears of that follow-up question. This is a follow-up to DOC.
Up to both, because the chief director mentioned that it's a legal requirement. Didn't say if it was a legal requirement for RIA to take place as part of the guideline, the DPME guideline, which you said was October 2015. Unless the one I have is an older version, but it's February 2012, where there's been a requirement in the legislative process for RIA to take place. So question to the chief director and then to FTB whether they conducted the RIA that they say they have in terms of the source, or whether they just did research, which is not the same thing.
Yeah, in the main, it's going to you, but FTB will respond on issues that are affecting you. I mean, them as your entity. That's what I'm going to say, Honorable Fundam. Can you clear that before we give it to another terrain? Parliament is another terrain.
Yes, Chair. The bill is our responsibility. FPB does not have to carry any RIA, because the suggestions will come. I'm saying in any normal event, they will carry their own research or whatever. So what I'm referring to, Chair, is that that decision of 2015 was saying it improvised in terms of what RIA should be to cover those steps that Honorable Fundam mentioned. And as a government employee and a person responsible for policy, I need to repeat to say we've been provided with the guidelines to ensure that we do that. And Cabinet said every department must carry out a socio-economic impact assessment, which is the equivalent of what we're talking about in terms of RIA. It might be what the Honorable Member is reading is leading to that decision that said from the 1st of April, from the 1st of October, that's what needs to happen in terms of the steps that the Honorable Member outlined. But it is our responsibility. It will be unfair to expect it from SPP. That's what I'm saying. As an employee of the department, I take responsibility. But as I said, I went further to say, by the time the 1st of October, we had started processing this, and there were some that were like excused from engaging in such. But in terms of fairness or whatever, I will not have anything more to say, because the more I say it, the more my statement gets misconstrued, and things that so I don't know what to say anymore.
Sorry to do this. It's a simple question. Did they do one? It's a yes or no. Not did you do one? Yes or no, you didn't.
Then, because you must organize yourselves, must organize yourselves. And I want you to listen, because I'm going to give that's a fundamental question, but the three members. That is why I want you to listen. The three members will come. I know that Honorable Monley, you want Parliament to come in.
the legal services of Parliament will have to come in. But were you going to say that? Because you raised your hand, Honorable Chair.
No, Chair. I was going to say the department must just don't explain, because you raise another thing. Just answer. Have you done it following what you know? Because that comes from that decision of the we were talking about it. In any case, it's you who made us aware about this decision. So just straight, you know. Don't explain to many things.
Okay. What do you know what car means? That's all. This is what the members want. They want your response on that one. Honorable Kumbele, the Parliament will come. I know you are very interested in what they are going to say. I was saying just get organized so that you respond properly.
Thank you, Chairman.
The Chief Director is now delegating to the advisor of the Minister.
Chair, let me allow me to delegate to my colleague on the right to clarify it further.
Thank you, Chairman.
Maybe before he responds from the various separated parliament, I thought I wanted to raise something with him based on what his response on Ria. He was encouraging us to understand that things are moving fast. Now that things are moving fast, we need to understand at some stage we have to move fast. But what is missing in his statement is what obligation then do they have to ensure that these requirements are met so that we can be able to move fast. Because if we have to move fast, it doesn't mean that we must have fundamental requirements to move fast. And those fundamental requirements depend on your technical, what you call, interventions. So what I'm worried about is that when you talk of RIA, it's not just some of the things that have been said. It's got a serious economic impact. When we talk of regulatory impact assessment, it does not only apply in this, in a number of other things. It's got serious economic impact. There's a lot of damage in the country that happens. If you come to jobs, we remember talking about inequalities, creation of jobs. It's not just a simple thing, it's not a small thing, it's a very big thing. So what I'm saying is that if you say we move fast, but it means you must accept that for us to move fast, we're not supposed to be asking the question, why has this not been done? Because you would have actually ensured that by the time you ask us to do this, you have moved fast technically.
Yes. I'm sure you're better organized now. You know, you said October, and I said to you 2016. You remember? For the implementation. I said to you, is it 2016? You said, no, 2015. Because you are not clear. Because before that, there were some processes that was followed by government. Starting from 2007? But starting much earlier than 2015. And then implementation was in 2015. Is that the case? I'm talking about the year. And you have a right to say, because I say that, you have a right to say on this one, we are not sure. You're not supposed to kill yourself because we want the yes question or the no question. You can just organize yourselves on that. We're still meeting on the 15th of February. But the issue that the community is raising is fundamental. Mr. Masid.
Let me delegate to my colleague, and once he has finalized, I'll come back and finalize on the matter.
If you want to come back and finalize it, if he's going to respond it, he must have responded to it. There is no, if you can't respond it yourself, he can respond to it. He must respond it to it fully.
Let me take the option of coming back to the committee in detail on the details.
Honorable Funda.
May I raise a serious dissatisfaction that the department knew that we were going to discuss in RIA. They knew. They would, which means that they should know whether or not they conducted RIA. There's nothing to come back on. Did you or did you not? You know this is going to be discussed. There's nothing you need to go and go back and discuss. Did you conduct a regulatory impact assessment study or not? You will know whether you haven't. And this really, we shouldn't give them space to go back. They should just answer the question. If it's a no, it's a no. There's no need to go back and try and spin this issue as a yes or no answer, and they must give that answer. I am not satisfied with them going back and formulating some tall tale. They must just tell us.
It goes back to what we said earlier when we started the meeting. You see, you represent the department, you represent the minister, you represent the DG. They have given you a mandate. And before accepting the mandate, you must do your homework. It's not that the matter was not raised yesterday. It was raised yesterday. By the way, it's raised in a document. And definitely you should have checked all issues around RIA. And now we cannot get an answer from DOC. And I think it would be incorrect for them to say yes, when they are not sure, Honorable Funda. That's my view. I'm just putting my view. Yes. Because if they are not empowered, if they don't have a capacity to deal with it, what do we want them to say? They must go back, and I think this is what they request from committee. Give them the mandate by the DG and the minister, as they are. Honorable Kongubele, because let me not, I'll raise my issues when members are done. Honorable Chair, Honorable Andam, and then Honorable Kongubele. In that order.
Honorable Chair, I think let's I like your summary, because we don't want them to give us an answer that they're not sure of, because that answer will be very problematic going forward. We want to deal with this particular issue as a matter of agency, and we are saying this is one of the very, very critical issues that will assist us to go forward. And I agree with those who are saying this is not acceptable, really. I agree with those who are saying this is not acceptable. But equally, we don't want a response that is going to be problematic to us going forward with regards to this particular issue. I agree. And I will appeal to my honorable member that the rest must not pursue this particular matter further. Thank you.
The advisor and the chief director are mandated. They were given full authority by the minister and the DG to come represent them here today. If they felt that these people were incapable of representing them, then they should have been here themselves. They know the answer to the question. They know it's a no. But they do not want to give a no answer because maybe, I don't know, they're afraid of the minister or they're afraid of the political implications. Tell the truth and shame the devil. Did you do a regulatory impact assessment or not? You know the answer to that question. I can see your face, you know the answer to that question. So please, just indulge us. You do know it's a no. Just say no. No one's going to do anything to you. We'll protect you.
Honorable Kalak, and then I will... Oh, before, sorry. She raised the hand first. Honorable Van Dijk.
Two of my questions weren't answered, so I'm not sure if there's still room for that around the games. And then these two things that I'm still want some clarity on, because yesterday also write something on the fact that there's in the bill there's no differentiation or distinction between individuals and official institutions. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is I want to refer to 16.1, because I don't understand clearly. The bill mentioned, magazines and newspapers were brought up, but nothing is said about blogging and there's no referral to all the other forms of reporting where individuals are. I want to know if they are exempt or are they included, but they also registered. Because there's a lot of... in that 16.1, you've got your drawings, pictures, computer software, statues, software, a lot of things. Mm. I want to know, I want to have clarity if they are also, the wording, under the current wording, there would be a massive increase in the amount of content publishers that would have to register. And the other thing also on the question that I asked on the, specifically on the streaming of the bill that doesn't refer to VOD, 18.6, it exempts broadcasters that are subject to regulation by CASA from applying for classification of a clip or game. The implication of the clause when read with subsection 8 and 9 is that any broadcaster that also provides video on demand services over the internet will have to register with both CASA. So is that not over excessive?
Are those the questions that were not responded to?
Okay.
Or is new questions?
No, they discussed those two issues.
I'm checking if
the
questions so that they are okay. Because they were taking notes.
Okay. The
questions they were recording the questions.
Sorry, the question that they left out is how does the Film Board and Publications intend to deal with online international distributors of banks who do not register with the board? And then also, how is user-generated content defined?
And that one is on page 1 of the presentation.
No, that was a question that I raised that wasn't answered. The other
did you get that? Is it the question that you omitted? You omitted that question. Please listen. And I feel... I appeal to you that you listen carefully so that the question, we don't do what we're doing now, because it's on our time.
Chairperson, in relation to the user-generated content, I had responded to it to say, in terms of that tabular document, it was on page 6 of dating, where we define how content, user-generated content is. So my colleague, I think, he has responded partly to the other one, so we can finalize on this.
Do you hear the...
Yeah, thank you.
It was responded to.
Thank you. I'll start with the question that says why... Why does the definition of streaming not include video on demand services? And why no references made to video on demand services in section 18.6 exemption to broadcasters? I did indicate earlier that we have considered all the inputs from the initial stream of broadcasters, ETV, and we have now redrafted the definition of streaming and the definition of film so that we specifically exclude broadcast content. So to that extent, I think we have covered that to ensure that there's no confusion. The second question is, how do we intend to deal with online international distributors who are not registered with the board? There is a very clear strategy on how we intend to deal with that. Currently, as you know, we have arrangements with in terms of Section 23, Section 22(3) of the Films and Publications Act, where we issue permits to online content distributors upon payment of a prescribed fee. Currently, we're charging $7.95. That enables them to self-classify content, subject to us providing training and doing industry audits. Of course, there are those that are not registered. There's a very clear plan to deal with them. We are currently pursuing a number of those and to ensure that they comply. Of course, there are plans to obtain interdicts to block them. And the MOU that we have with ICASA will enable us to ensure that we block them at ISP level. So there's a very clear strategy in terms of dealing with those entities. The last question it was, why more emphasis on films and games and less on publications when it comes to classification? The reason is because films and games and games have more impact on children. And the studies that have shown that children tend to mold their behavior and character based on what the stuff that they get exposed to. And films and games leave a longer impact on the minds of young children. It's for this reason that there's more emphasis on film testing, but also it's because there's a regime already in terms of the press council that looks specifically at publications. It's not because we choose to be less restrictive or have a more firm approach when it comes to films and games, because there's different types of impact with respect to each material.
Okay. I skipped Honorable Kalako because the hands were up when we come to address the clarity.
Because I think RIA has become so important now. I think the department must have help us on this. You don't have to spin anything. You don't have to hide anything. If you have that, because now you are posing, you are giving us, I will ask you another question now. Whether who initiated the bill? Were you part of the bill in the process of initiation from FPP and drafting and all those things? You see, you give us, you are taking us back to that. Because that if you are unable to answer this, it has those implications here. I think they must just answer it, and we can't ask it to, the embassy of it will ask it from DOC. Because the FPP have told us of the research they have done on the issue, which is not clear. So they must just answer it and then we'll move forward.
That's the emphasis, because that was raised. Answer the question so that we move. I think member Kalak was clear that you don't have to hide, you don't have to spin, you just be honest with the committee. Because that's, you know, I think yesterday they were talking about an oath, not the oath that you take in parliament, the oath in the committee, that officials must speak the truth.
and they don't speak the truth in the committee, it's clear how to deal with that in your PFMA.
Yep. Thank you so much, Chairperson and Member. I think we will not attempt to answer the question. We'll answer the question. The first thing is, we omitted, because when we talked about my colleague, we talked about the a legislative requirement. In fact, it is a cabinet directive or a guideline, the cabinet directive or a guideline. So it's not a legislative requirement. Secondly, I think when we our intentions, Chairperson, working with the Segment Publication Board has always been that we are responding to some of the constitutional court findings. Therefore, it was a technical.
Chair, sorry.
The last one.
I'm sorry, Chair. No. He is spinning.
Yep.
Yes. Did you conduct a regulatory impact assessment? Yes, we did. Or no? Don't spin.
Can you switch off your... You know, please help us. Because if Honorable Fandame and Honorable Kongwele, please, you are messing up my meeting. But DOC, please help us. Don't raise issues that will get you into another problem. Just tell us what the response is.
My apologies, Chairperson. I thought I'll provide the context. At this stage, Chairperson and members, we are informed that we did not have a RIA conducted. There was research done which looked at the different countries. So we don't have a RIA at this stage, Chairperson.
I wonder what was discussed. Honestly, I really wonder what was difficult for the department. We spent something like 20 minutes dealing with the real thing, over and above. Your responses must not be difficult. They must be honest. Difficult responses must be honest. Because once the response is not honest, then you create a problem. Ms. Ngema.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try to be precise and to the point. And I greatly appreciate the questions from the two honorable members, because for me they indicate two things. Whether I missed my weight and therefore created confusion. Secondly, I was really misunderstood. So I will be precise and brief so that it is very clear. There can never be an obligation or a function or a duty that is required of Parliament unless it comes out of a stipulated mandate. And that is either the Constitution or the legislation. As we speak right of now, and as the department has indicated, neither of those are in existence. But in terms of justice rationalization, to rationalize justice as well as rationalize the court, Schedule 6, Item 16A of the Constitution does provide such an obligation, which is only restricted to justice issues and the running of the court of the country. Now, having said that, Chairperson, I said Parliament can only act within its stipulated mandate. And if we move from the Constitution, and I have said there is no legislation, the next thing are the rules of Parliament, which have to be enacted or established after an obligation and an enabling provision that comes from the Constitution itself. Hence, we have internal rules that deal with internal proceedings of Parliament. And that takes me to the question to say, the question that is posed to me in respect of RIA is a process question. And furthermore, just to add, is that we advisors, we provide advice that will influence, of course, the legislators. But at the end, the legislators are decision makers. Now, moving from that chairperson, in terms of the rules of parliament, in fact, maybe let me finish this, then I move to the rules. Now, the question, and I am very much happy that the department has actually given the answer, because earlier on, we were giving answers to your questions upon assumptions. Now, they have said, we admit the hour was not done, either in 1996 or any time from 1996 up to date. That is now clear. And my honorable member has also indicated that she has checked and found the guidelines. That would be either 2012, 2015, 2016. Currently, we are not sure. Now, you need to understand the difference and the status of those instruments. There's a difference between the constitution and the legislation and the regulation and the guidelines, directives, proclamations, all that. But supreme to all of them is the constitution followed by the legislation. Now, my having said, neither the constitution nor the legislation does say, here's your obligation, Parliament, in respect of here. That is what I meant when I say Parliament must act within its stipulated mandate. However, the Constitution did not stop there, because this issue now becomes an issue of oversight. And then Section 55(2) comes in place, which has nothing to do with the legislative process. In fact, all this, the issue about RIA, should have been either I submit and I advise. PEP. So one, when the committee has deliberated and is preparing its report, it mentions whatever it has resolved to mention in respect of RIA for purposes of the House, because you must remember the committee is a body of the House and it cannot stand alone and it cannot do things on its own. Now, if we look at the rules of Parliament, specifically NA, and this is now in respect of the motion of desirability, you need to understand, time is evolving and things are changing rapidly. The rules that we talk of now are the rules that Parliament adopted on 2016 May that speak clearly on the motion of desirability. But the rules previously, they were not clear. Hence, there's been constitutional cases, especially in respect of bills initiated by Parliament or by the member or by the committee. Now, that makes a distinction between an executive bill and a bill initiated by Parliament. I will not mention specific rules, but in terms of the rules of Parliament, the bills that are initiated by the executive, when the first reading is done, the House as a plenary decides what happens. And this is in line with the new rules, not the old ones. And if the House did not hold the bill at that stage, but referred it to the committee for processing, the committee must then continue processing the bill despite the issues that they pick up which relate to the letter of the motion of desirability. And the remedy to that is on their report, when they prepare a report for the House to mention all that transpired within the committee proceedings. But a bill from the executive cannot be halted following the fact, or from the committee stage without moving forward, following from the fact that the procedure was not done. And that is basically the crucial part I wanted to get through. Whereas the difference, as I said, with the members' bill, the members' bill or the committee bill, again, the motion of desirability is discussed. And for those bills, chances are, if the decision at the motion of desirability is negative, that bill does not even move to committee. But for the executive bill, once referred, which has been the case with this bill before us, the committee must deliberate, whether then they indicate that due to this reason, they will shorten their deliberation or they will go straight until the end. But they report to the House that on the resolution as a committee that we have taken, we are so unsatisfied with the fact that this year from this bill from 1966 has never been given the regulation intake assessment, which is a very crucial exercise, and it's necessary, and it's important, and it should be valued. And in fact, as I told, I would suggest that perhaps the committee should look into bringing this to the attention of the Constitutional Review Committee to look at the Constitution, whether this can then come in as an obligation for Parliament to say, we will not process bills that have not gone through RIA. A guideline coming from the executive has not applied to the Parliament, but it may influence the decision. But a guideline internally from Parliament is binding on Parliament. That's all, Chairperson. Thank you.
We are closing the meeting now.
I don't want
you to discuss as if there is no tomorrow.
Yeah. That's one issue.
You want to respond to what she is saying? Come again?
What? I will not,
you know, members, assist me so that we received a response from the department in relation to RIA that they never gave me. Because this is what opened the last discussion on the last part of it. The parliamentary services will come to us on the 13th again, because if you want to engage on what they say, I will give you. But they are coming back to us to give their input on the whole bill. And advise us on processes. We'll then engage even on the issues that we want to engage on that day, which is the 13th of October, before we finalize the bill on the 29th. Honorable Teddy and Honorable Kumbel, Honorable Van Damme.
Honorable Teddy, just for that.
No, I'm happy to be here until 4, if you want that.
No,
but remember that we have not provided any lunch.
Honorable Chair, that's what I said. You see, if some of these issues are not there, they are likely to cause problems. And I don't want to find myself to be in trouble with the state law advice. What? The legal system. Parliamentary. Okay. You see, the at one stage there has been a problem. Because we needed to know if certain things have been done in one parliamentary system. That thing was not done as pronounced by the president in his State of the Nation address. And the argument was, this State of the Nation of National Address pronouncement was not translated into legislation. Hence, the officials did not move with speed to implement that particular aspect. I don't want to go in detail. I'm just talking principle. All I'm saying is that it will be wrong to encourage certain things not to be affected on the basis that they have not been translated into legislation or whatever. That would be wrong. We'll be setting very wrong precedents. Here in this instance, we are talking about a cabinet decision. So I'm coming now on the basis of what she said earlier. Because if we live here without having clarified that particular aspect, will create an impression that certain things would not be implemented because they are not necessarily legislated, which would be very problematic. A cabinet decision needs to be respected. Let me talk about three. Thank you.
Honorable Kungwele and
Honorable. I think maybe it's, I want to reassure that I think the way you've been facilitating us is very useful.
There's no question about it.
The way you've been facilitating us is very useful. There's no issue about it. But I'm saying, taking your guidance, that on the 13th, it's correct. But there are issues that, as they come on the 13th, they must take into account. If I listen to the parliamentary service, they treat the parliamentary committee, the portfolio committee, as an institution with no rational obligations. No rational obligations at all. As a technical instrument, purely technical, having no duty to respond to societal imperatives. Because this is how this thing is being raised. There are three instances where you take it. First, if the programming committee, I use the word programming committee, had not actually required this, ours is to purely follow clause by clause and technically process the bill. And the fact that we're a political structure, a substructure of the main parliament, with a duty to react rationally to what is actually before us, she keeps that away. Ours is that, that's why the word said, I challenge what she says, you are acting outside your powers. Because the word actually is a negative statement. It says they're acting illegally, in one way or another. What is they're acting outside your powers? Somebody must tell me, when this committee, whose duty is to apply its mind better than parliament, in a more detailed way, when it says the best way to put this thing through, the following is supposed to be done, to make it better, saying that we're acting outside what you call powers. I cannot accept that. Actually, it goes back, Chair, to close my point, that maybe she will go and read some of the great lawyers, who would have said in Zimbabwe, when dry legalism cannot administer justice, and activists must make the law, we are activist operators here within the law. So I'm saying that when she comes back on the 13th, we cannot be advised to be a pure technical instrument. We have got rational responsibility. And that rational responsibility is informed by a number of factors. But those factors, when they are factored in, they must be within the law.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I agree with both previous speakers, including Honorable Sedia. I think this day must go down in history. Me and Honorable Sedia agreed with each other. I think I'm covered by both speakers. In terms of the Constitution, as members of Parliament, we're bound by the Constitution. Here's a bill in front of us which will infringe that very Constitution. We need to have all the information in front of us which the REA will provide before we proceed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I feel very comfortable that I was right not to give you to speak. Because you know why I'm comfortable with in my mind. It's because these are the issues that we'll engage on when we meet on the 13th. Only the good thing is that you raise them so that she comes better prepared, or she comes prepared. You see, when you make a presentation, there is nothing worrying than not to be understood. Because if I don't understand you, I will put across my views on the basis of not understanding what you are saying. I'm not saying you did not understand her. She may feel that way. And I'm saying if the feeling is like that, it's worrying from a person who was making the presentation. But I'm saying, members, we have had the parliamentary services. She
is equipped on how to respond when women are men. If there are perceptions on what she was saying, she would clarify them. But you have spoken your mind in terms of what she was saying. That's what is good about it. And members, because I don't want you to respond, Ms. Nema. I really don't want you to. I want you to respond on the 13th. But if you feel strongly like the three members, you may go ahead.
No, Chairperson, I take your advice, but it was basically which I will take. I wanted, with your permission, to just mention a statement for members to ponder on as they go to consider all that has been said and the content of the bill. It's just a statement, but I'll be directed by your... My statement is basically to say, I plead with members to appreciate that there is a distinction, a very clear distinction, between oversight, exercise for Parliament, and legislative process for Parliament. That is all, Chair.
And again, if that statement at the end doesn't sit comfortable with members, we'll deal with it. On the 13th. But here, members, as we're proceeding to finalize the bill, as we're proceeding towards that destiny, I feel very comfortable that we're very thorough up to now. Because there is nothing painful than you do a shoddy work in terms of the bill, and then Parliament, when we take it there, it takes it back. That is why I appreciate your dealing with all corners of it, because we are processing it so that when we go there, we are able to stand up and say, these are the issues that we have raised. You know, the other thing is to tighten the screws for it not to be challenged. Because if it will be challengeable, then it will affect our processes as a committee. So we'll have to do all those things. That is why we appeal for those who are supposed to provide information to us to be very clear and all of that in terms of the department. And again, it will be very necessary that we convey this message that says, the OCE, you can have 20 FPB people. You can have 20. But if you don't have the leadership of the department here, it will result to this, that we're dealing with today. I'm not saying Mr. Mashiri are not part of the leadership, but there is supposed to be a team of people, including those who are legal people in the department, to be part of these processes, because they create mockery of what we do at the end when we're supposed to pass the bill. But members, thank you very much for your vigorous engagement. You can now go to the corner shop and get yourself a very cold drink after this. You will raise that with me, because I don't think it's for the committee. You can go to the corner shop and then get yourself a very cold Coke, so that you. Thank you very much, members. The meeting is adjourned until the 13th of October.
Thank you.